It's Wednesday, July 1st. This is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the financial crisis in Greece remains unresolved. Iran nuclear talks also have yet to reach a conclusion. Egypt searches for answers after a deadly car bomb attack.
All day long, we have around 70 tons of material coming into Earth from asteroids every day. We don't detect most of them. They're really very small particles.
It's a cosmic concept. Today is World Asteroid Day. Also ahead, two popular musicians get together for a great new song. It's all on today's International Edition. The Greek bailout crisis remains unresolved, with European financial chiefs saying they would continue to examine Athens' last-minute debt relief proposal Wednesday. The Eurozone's 19 finance ministers discussed the Greek plan for a two-year loan deal in an emergency phone conference late Tuesday, just hours before the country's massive bailout program expired at midnight. But several officials said no agreement was reached, and the finance chief said they would hold a new teleconference early today. Alexis Christophorus joins us from VOA's New York Bureau. Alexis, what financial tactics are the Greeks taking at this point?
Well, Greece is asking for a last-minute extension of its international bailout, and it's also proposing a new two-year funding program. But German Chancellor Angela Merkel is calling it too little too late. She says Germany will not negotiate on a new bailout agreement before Greece's referendum, which is planned for Sunday. Merkel says it's too late to vet this new proposal, and she's blaming the Greek government for allowing its bailout program to expire at midnight tonight. Now, without any new rescue funds, Greece will default today on its $1.8 billion payment due to the International Monetary Fund. Since 2010, Greece has received nearly 240 billion euros in two bailouts from the European Union and the IMF. Even so, Eurogroup leaders held a teleconference earlier today to discuss this new bailout plan. They've already scheduled another teleconference for tomorrow morning, but leaders are not holding out any great hope here, since this latest plan does not offer any of the concessions that creditors have been demanding for months now.
I'm sure this is having a ripple effect throughout the European markets at this point.
Oh, it certainly is. In fact, markets around the world just closed the books on the second quarter, and we did see U.S. stocks bounce back from their biggest one-day sell-off of the year, in which they had erased all of their gains for the year. And we also saw the biggest drop in European stocks in quite some time. So it definitely was a rough quarter for world markets. However, the euro did post a nice gain against the dollar for the quarter.
Greece is a relatively small economy, as we were talking about on yesterday's program. Mm-hmm. And it does have implications, though, should this crisis continue and perhaps one of these new deals is not accepted.
Right. Now, Sunday's referendum actually took European officials by surprise. And many have said that if Greece votes no on Sunday to new austerity measures, it would push the country out of a single euro currency and potentially wipe out wages and pensions for the Greek people. And the likelihood of Greece leaving the eurozone is probably the greatest it's been in the 5 years since Greece has been embroiled in this economic distress. And while Greece's economy, as we say, is relatively small, leaving the eurozone would be seen as a black eye for the single currency experiment, if you would. Spain's prime minister says that it would be a negative message that euro membership is reversible, and it would fan fears of a Greek contagion. People may think if one country can leave the euro, others can too, namely Italy, Spain, or Portugal, which we know have all had financial troubles of their own.
Alexis Christophorus is part of our economic zone in New York, and she's following all the latest developments. Alexis, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, the Greek debt crisis has also sparked a couple of new phrases on Twitter. Michael Lippin joins us in Studio 22 to tell us what those are. Michael?
Hi, Jim. That is right. Twitter users, in their infinite wisdom, have been getting creative recently with their hashtags about Greece, inventing new words out of existing ones to draw attention to what's going on there. Okay, so here's one of them. Grexit, spelled G-R-E-X-I-T. G-R-E-X-I-T, that is a combination of the words Greece and exit, with exit being a reference to the potential of Greece exiting the Eurozone. The Topsy Analytics website shows that hashtag Grexit has been used at least 30,000 times in the last 24 hours. Even more popular than that is the hashtag Greferendum. Another play on words there, merging Greece and referendum. That's had about 31,000 mentions on Twitter in the past day. And that referendum, as we've just heard, is due to take place on July 5th, with Greek voters being asked to approve or reject the economic bailout terms set by the European Union.
Well, Michael, are there any chances that this greferendum might not take place?
The greferendum, perhaps. There does appear to be a chance that the vote won't go ahead on Sunday based on a tweet that I read from Wall Street Journal reporter Pedro da Costa. Using his handle, at P. da Costa, he quoted an unnamed Greek government official a short time ago as saying Greece would consider canceling the referendum if there is a good deal on the table. So we'll have to see if that actually pans out. Now, the Greek prime minister is under enormous pressure at home and abroad to save his country from an economic meltdown. But, you know, he's also finding some support on Twitter, including from the folks behind the Occupy Wall Street movement. The Occupiers, as they call themselves, have 193,000 Twitter followers, and they used their handle at OccupyWallSTNYC to post a photo of Prime Minister Tsipras along with one of his recent quotes. And this is what the quote says. Austerity has proven itself to be an enormous, austerity has proven to be an economic and social catastrophe, a catastrophe for democracy. Austerity is the crisis itself. It is not a solution to the crisis. And then they tweeted the hashtags truth, Grexit, and Greece. Jim?
Wow. Well, along with Grexit and Greferendum, we have hashtag great for our own Michael Lippin. Thanks for joining us. Follow Michael on Twitter at Michael_Lippin. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. President Barack Obama said Tuesday the United States would walk away from a possible nuclear deal with Iran if he is not convinced that it would block Tehran's path to building a nuclear weapon. Mr. Obama said at a White House news conference that Tehran must live up to a framework agreement it reached earlier this year with the United States and five other world powers to allow inspectors to visit Iranian nuclear sites to verify it is keeping its commitments. Mr. Obama's comments came as the United States, Germany, France, Russia, China, and Britain extended negotiations with Iran in Vienna, Austria, past their self-imposed Tuesday deadline for completing a deal. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins is at the site of the talks, and a short time ago filled in International Edition's Susan Yaki on the latest.
Iran nuclear negotiators have decided to extend measures under an interim agreement until July 7th. And this is to allow them more time to reach a long-term solution. senior advisor for strategic communications, Marie Harf, announced the plan earlier today. She said it will give Iran and the five permanent members of the UN Security Council in Germany, the so-called P5 plus one, more time to continue work on the final agreement, which will be called a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. And, of course, this announcement comes after officials on both sides acknowledge that they would likely miss today's self-imposed deadline for a final deal. But in spite of the continued talks, there is still activity here in Vienna. Earlier today, a delegation led by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met with a Russian delegation led by Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. And also earlier in the day, Kerry met with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. He returned to Vienna today after flying home for consultations.
There's been a lot of criticism of these talks because we haven't seen that much going on. Is there a feeling there that this is a bit of a breakthrough somehow?
Negotiators have been tight-lipped about the scope of the negotiations. There is concern that two of the main sticking points have been the phasing of sanctions relief and also the amount of access that nuclear inspectors would be allowed to Iranian sites. Both sides have indicated that the fact that they are willing to continue talking is a sign that they are hopeful that there could possibly be an agreement down the road.
This is VOA's International Edition. Turning to Egypt, where President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi on Tuesday pledged to change penal laws within days to bring swift justice following a car bombing that killed that country's chief prosecutor. VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy spoke with Michelle Dunn, a senior associate at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, about the situation. Mohamed, how did she assess the call to change Egypt's criminal laws for swift justice?
Well, Jim, she expressed her deep concern that such changes could transform civilian trials into military trials, and she explained why.
They include things like making appeals much less available, giving judges discretion about whether they even want to listen to defense testimony or not. I mean, in effect, they would make civilian trials much more like military trials. Sisi has also said that death sentences will be carried out, and there are now hundreds of Egyptians with death sentences against them in prison.
President Sisi indirectly blamed the attack on the Muslim Brotherhood by saying those issuing orders from behind bars. But Michelle Dunn warned against jumping to conclusions about who is responsible for the terrorist attack that took the life of Egypt's chief prosecutor.
It probably was the Sinai-based group Ansar Beit al-Maqdis because it is the most sophisticated group able to carry out a large-scale sophisticated attack like this. They are not a brotherhood-affiliated group at all, but certainly the Egyptian media is very quick. I mean, before there was any investigation done whatsoever, they had blamed the brotherhood for doing this.
Michelle Dunn has served as a diplomat in Egypt and knows a lot about the history of restoring to security measures instead of dealing with the root causes. Mohammed, did she see tightening the security measures as the solution to confront violence and terrorism in Egypt?
She argued that there are more to be done than just tough security measures.
There also needs to be a broader strategy of political inclusion, of economic opportunity, and so forth. I just think in a situation like Egypt, a security strategy alone is alienating a very large part of the population and threatening to drive the country toward continuing and worsening instability.
Michelle Dunn noted that the number of terrorist attacks against the Egyptian government targets is 10 times as many since the military coup of 2013, and that the crackdown was so broad that it inflicted many political opponents like the Muslim Brotherhood, other Islamic groups, and even the secular groups like the April 6th movement. So she concluded that it became a matter of Egyptian military-led government cracking down on opposition of all sorts and kinds.
Mohamed El-Shenawy in our studios, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth perspective and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Today is World Asteroid Day, and VOA's Rick Pantaleo is celebrating by probing deep into the cosmic implications for us here on Earth. Rick, what's this all about?
Well, it's actually part of a global awareness movement where people from around the world come together to learn about asteroids, the dangers that they pose to our home planet, and steps that could be taken to protect us in case a giant Earth-smashing asteroid should head our way.
We certainly don't want that. Is there anything lurking out there? How are they looking for these things?
Well, right now, they have spotted about 1,500 potentially dangerous asteroids out there. And of course, asteroids vary in size from teeny tiny particles to huge, almost planet-sized rocks. And what they do is they have robotic cameras on telescopes scanning the skies all the time. According to Mario DeLeo Winkler, who I spoke to a little earlier, he's an astronomer at the University of California, Riverside. He says we're at about, out of 10, we're at about a level 3 for any potential danger of a real strike.
The big ones will probably be easier to detect because they're brighter, they're more in the technical limits of the telescopes, so those will probably be detected with some years in advance, I hope. But the smaller ones, they're crashing into Earth all day long. We have around 70 tons of material coming into Earth from asteroids every day. And we don't detect most of them. They're really very small particles.
And, of course, that goes to show you that the sizes do vary, and they're keeping an eye on it the best they can. And one of the reasons why they have created Asteroid Day is basically to get support from the people to give more funds to develop more technology and better technology that can keep an eye on these potential dangers.
Hmm. Well, we certainly don't want to go the way of the dinosaurs, so hopefully the technology will continue to develop.
I wanted to add one thing. Do you know why they chose June 30th as the...
No.
The 30th was chosen because it's also the anniversary of the 1908 Siberian Tunguska event that supposedly was the largest asteroid impact on Earth in recent history.
Wow. Well, maybe Hallmark has a new line of greeting cards about to come out. World Asteroid Day, and we're celebrating it with Rick Pantaleo. Rick, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, here on Earth, the pop star Meghan Trainor and multiple Grammy winner John Legend are teaming up, and you know that means some good music. Our team of David Byrd and Larry London chat about it.
You might be familiar with her mega hit, It's All About That Bass, or maybe her latest tune, Dear Future Husband. But Meghan Trainor has got a new song coming out. Larry London stops by to talk about it. Larry, what is Meghan's new song coming out?
The new song is called Like I'm Gonna Lose You. It's a beautiful ballad, which is a definite change for Meghan Trainor from the bubblegum pop sound that we've come to know and love over the last year or so. But she and John Legend have recorded this song together. She wrote the song. She never really imagined that John Legend would actually agree to sing it. She said when he arrived in the studios the day they recorded it, she actually burst into tears. She said it was so intense to actually record this song with him. She debuted the song at the Billboard Music Award show. They sang it together live on the air in May.
I found myself dreaming in silver and gold, like a scene from a movie that every broken heart knows. We were walking on moonlight and you pulled me close.
Wow.
Now, speaking of Billboard Music Awards, she's got a shelf full of those as well.
A shelf, a virtual collection of two that she won out of 9 nominations. And, of course, John Legend himself has won many, many awards, 9 Grammys. So this is quite a powerhouse combination of artists.
And John Legend also teamed up with Kelly Clarkson on her latest CD for a tune. So is he, like, kind of making the duet circuit now?
He's doing the duets. And he's also working with a variety of artists that you wouldn't normally associate him with. Of course, he won an Oscar with Common for, you know, the song Glory from Selma. So that's tremendous. And you know, he just is kind of branching off a little bit in his own direction and working with some people that have given him a chance to get exposure in a kind of music that he typically isn't known to do.
Now, you and I were chatting a little bit before. Meghan Trainor is also kind of a spokesperson for people like me who struggle with their weight
and
a little
me.
Bit. because she's not, you know, your twiggy kind of pop star.
Right.
She is a little bit heavier. But she's made a point of encouraging particularly young women who struggle a lot with body image anyway, in her audience, the pop audience, to accept themselves.
Exactly. And she's working on a number of different things that are about self-awareness and positive image. One of them, she's created her own line of cosmetics called Full Beauty Brands. And she wants people to understand that this is something that's designed for women of all sizes and shapes. She herself never saw herself as a pop star. She openly admits she started off as a writer. She wrote songs for Rascal Flatts and Hunter Hayes. It was L.A. Reid who said, no, we've got to release this with you singing it. You know, when she was came to him with All About That Bass. And so that's how the story started. She didn't see herself singing that song.
Wow. And the world, as they say, changed. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Larry. You know, you can always hit up Larry on Twitter, VOA_music. Here at International Edition, it's VOA_IE. Listen for Larry's show, Border Crossings. You can also find it on our website. That's www.voanews.com.
I'm gonna love you.
Have been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at voanews.com. We thank our director Tracy Carter and our engineer Carl Starling and you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The world's ocean produces 50 to 70% of our oxygen. It regulates our climate, absorbs carbon dioxide, supplies us with much of the protein we consume, and supports the greatest abundance of life on our planet. If the ocean were to disappear today, nearly all life on Earth would soon follow. Nonetheless, our ocean is under attack. As much as 40% of it is heavily affected by human activities that result in pollution, overfishing, and loss of coastal habitats. The ocean needs protection, and the United States and China, two of the top maritime nations in the world, as well as two of the global leaders in ocean science, have agreed to work together to do just that. On the marine environment, there is an urgent need for our countries to step up and help lead, said Secretary of State John Kerry during his closing remarks at the Strategic Track Oceans meeting. We have a real opportunity to deal with conserving and protecting the ocean, and we are already working together to address this, he said. During the meeting, Secretary of State Kerry and Chinese State Councilor Yang Jiechi agreed to combat illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, expand cooperation among both countries' coast guards and maritime enforcement authorities, develop a Green Ports Initiative to reduce marine pollution, better monitor changes in the ocean and climate, and develop sister city and third country cooperation to reduce marine litter. Secretary of State Kerry, State Counselor Yang Jiechi, and leaders of U.S. and Chinese maritime agencies also discussed the importance of establishing a marine protected area in the Antarctic Ross Sea, one of the world's last remaining pristine marine environments. The United States and much of the international community have long sought to create a marine protected area in the Ross Sea. This 1.34 million square kilometer area, often referred to as the last ocean, is home to over 10,000 unique species, including penguins, whales, and colossal squid. The oceans are part of us, all of us, every country that borders the ocean, and so many countries that depend on fish for the protein that feeds their people, said Secretary Kerry. We need to heed carefully the responsibilities that we have.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.